Hi, I'm Alan.
And I'm Alexis. We had 5 kids in 7 years. People think we're crazy, and sometimes we think they might be right. But most of the time, we love it.
We hope this is a place where you can learn to be a better parent, but without taking yourself too seriously.
Whether you're a new parent or have a few years under your belt, we hope you can find something new to think about.
Or laugh about. After all, this is Parenting in Real Life. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 93. Today we have a special guest. We have my sister, Michelle, and she's going to talk about some stuff she's learning and working on right now, and it is awesome. But before we get to that, parenting in real life.
Yes. So we were trying to think of something to share. I was like, oh, I have one from this morning. So in the morning before the kids go to school, we try to do a quick scripture time. Like 5 minutes or less. Like just really quick, something to do before they go to school. So it was time for scripture time, and Alan had already started a work meeting, so he wasn't there. So it was just me. And I was already feeling really frustrated because the boys were up before 7 o'clock screaming in their rooms and making rooster sounds. And I was still waking up and just like, seriously? But Lucy was still asleep. And so she's up there. And so I'm like telling the boys to stop because I didn't want them to wake Lucy up. Of course, they didn't stop. I still kept hearing random screaming. And then I'm trying to work out before the kids go to school, and I have a track on the door, and so it's annoying when people open the door because I'm trying to use this track. And literally opened like 6 times while I was trying to exercise, so I was feeling really frustrated about that. And so I go downstairs and I tell everyone it's time for scripture study, and then everyone keeps telling me about why they have to do other stuff right now besides this, and then they all start bugging each other, so people are like crying and screaming, and I'm just like so frustrated. So I just like go into lecture mode, and I'm like, you guys are really bothering me. Look at all this stuff that you were doing this morning, and you gotta stop, you know. Anyway, so I lectured them for the 5 minutes instead. And then, so I was looking at what I was gonna do for scriptures, and I was just like, obviously I'm not bringing the spirit into the house right now. It was supposed to be about the importance of the priesthood. So I was like, the priesthood's important, but we're gonna talk about it tomorrow. So the end, and let's just say some prayers. So I got a kid to say a prayer, and then we went and did hair and whatever. But I was just like, sometimes this is how the morning goes, and it was not good today. It's not a good start.
That's as real as you get. That feels so true. Shout out to all those single parents that is their life every single day. I just don't know.
I know. It probably would have been better if Alan was there. But it was just me, and I was already bugged. So it is what it is. So we wanted to start adding a parenting hack with our parenting in real life moment. Something
this may not be every week, because these will be times when we feel like we nail parenting, and we don't do that very often. So they'll just come up as they come up, okay? No pressure.
Something that has been working really well for us, though, is after-school snack time. And the kids usually come home ravenous, but they'll just kind of graze until dinner because they get home really late, and it's not a lot of time before dinner. And so I have a little snack tray. It's just like a Rubbermaid one. And I put the little snacks in it after school, and so they can come home and eat the snack, and then kitchen is closed. I'm like, hey, snack is done, no more eating. And so that helps a little bit with dinner, because otherwise we get to dinner and nobody's hungry anymore. So it's been good. I feel like I'm using my creativity to try to figure out what should the kids eat.
Yeah. It does give you a little bit more control over what they eat too, right?
That's
rather
true.
Than just letting them go wild and go straight to the worst stuff.
Because usually the kids come and are like, I want ice cream. And they'll come and, well, their snack is ice cream, which obviously isn't great or very filling. And so I try to have some healthy foods, some foods that are a little more filling. So I'll help them get to dinner time.
Yep.
And then I just wanted to reference our last episode. So we talked about balancing extracurriculars for kids. And we had a couple of comments on Instagram, which was awesome. But I think everyone agreed that it really just comes down to the kid. And it can change from kid to kid in your family. Someone mentioned that they've had like a rule for their family and it just didn't fit all their kids, you know? Yeah. And so you can adjust with each kid, but I think it's important to talk to your kid and get their perspective. But how much they can handle really just depends on each kid individually.
Love it. So true. And now for our hot mess, hot minute.
So as Alan mentioned, we are interviewing his sister Michelle today, and I think you are going to love this interview. Michelle also has 5 kids and had them even faster than we did, if you can believe that. But that has been really fun for me to be able to have someone to talk to about just the craziness of having 5 kids so close and motherhood and pursuing passions and just being a woman at this time. So she is so insightful, and I think you're going to really enjoy what she has to say and her story about how she started bringing her passion of art back into her life as a mom and what that looked like for her, but also what that can look like for anybody who needs something else to just get them excited and curious about life again. Michelle also recently came out with a journal that has her own artwork on the front, but it's not just a regular journal, but she has a specific practice that she's teaching to help find light in the world right now. So make sure you listen to the end and check out her website or Instagram to check out these amazing journals that are launching next week, which is super exciting. And now here's our episode with Michelle.
Hello, everyone. We are excited to be interviewing a small-time celebrity, my sister, Michelle. She's my sister, which is on the top of her resume.
Your older sister.
Older sister. Yeah. Older but smaller sister.
True.
For the last 25 years.
Also true. Smaller than everybody.
But Michelle is an artist. She's a mother of 5, parent of 5, pride. And she's had an interesting journey where she's been balancing those two things. So we thought it would be great to hear her story, and she's kind of where she's gotten to. And I think she has some cool things to share. So Michelle, welcome.
Thank you. Excited to be here. Chat with y'all.
Yeah. So do you want to just start by giving a little bit more of your history and your story?
Sure. Sure. As far as the art goes, being an artist, I think I've always been creative. From as young as I can remember, I feel like maybe perhaps because mom always facilitated coloring without coloring books, it was always blank paper. I've just always sought out creative outlets.
Maybe that's why I never felt creative. Just blank paper.
I love it. Yeah, I can't really remember a time where I wasn't kind of examining the world or seeing the world in a creative way. I've always felt driven to pursue creative things, if that makes sense. So The arts, some of you, like our older brother, always call me the artsy fartsy one. And I definitely feel like that is accurate. Like, it's just always been a big part of my life. But as far as becoming an artist goes, I actually, like so many things that have become so central in my life, I stumbled upon it unexpectedly. I wasn't planning on focusing on being an artist. I grew up, like most of the kids in our family, singing primarily, but always taking art classes on the side. Always, always, always.
Yeah.
But singing was my passion. It was the thing I was taking lessons for. I was in performing choirs. I was in musicals. And art was just something that I also did and loved. I'm sure a lot of that was the culture of where we went to school, though. Singing was huge. And so there was a bigger focus in general at our school. But as my senior year came to an end, I was in art classes with some really talented teachers, and that facilitated me getting into some statewide, not contests, but
like art shows, art.
But you had to enter the competition. Yeah. And honestly, I didn't expect to even get in, but I ended up getting an award, and the award led to being able to sit down with the head of every art director for all of the universities in Utah. That's where we lived. That's where I went to high school. So my professor, again, because art had never been at the forefront, I didn't realize that was a big deal. But my teacher at the time was like, well, we got to get you a portfolio together. I hadn't even been doing enough art to have a portfolio. So I worked around the clock to prep for these interviews. And then I met with the professors and didn't really think much more of it, and was anticipating going to school with an undeclared major, not really certain what I would do after I had chosen to go to Brigham Young University. That was as far as I'd really gotten. But truly, I was thinking more like go to like pre-law or something not artsy, because I'm also very serious. I always felt serious about my education and about what I would do with it. And I felt a lot of self-driven need to make wise choices with what I did with education. And then I got a phone call from the art department, and they were inviting me into the BYU art department on a scholarship. And I had been searching for what I should do. And I felt it was one of those times that I felt really strongly, this is what's meant to be, Michelle. I've had a few different times. Again, both of the times that I can think of specifically were things I was not interested in pursuing, but I felt really strongly that I was supposed to do it. This and a serving a mission prayer church.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking for it. I wasn't thinking I would be an artist. I just thought it would be something that enhanced my life like it always had, but not so big of a focus. But in that moment, I knew I had been searching, but that wasn't even on my radar. And when I got that call, I knew it was what I was supposed to do. And so I ended up studying art at BYU with a focus in painting, and I loved it and hated it, you know, like any real major. There are hard things and good things. And I got such a great education in art there. And then it was at a time, though, that art, at least in my program, was definitely taught in the old fashioned view of artist way. So it's like you're showing in galleries or you're not showing at all. And there's one type of fine art and it's with a capital F and a capital A, and any other type of art is beneath you. And there was like 0.5 classes about how to be a successful artist.
Wow.
It was crazy. In retrospect, it was so crazy that that's the most training we had in making it profitable. Yeah. Being able to sustain yourself with this, you know, this thing you felt called to have be part of your life. But we just had one course and they brought in successful artists and they would just chat with us. And sometimes they didn't even mention their finances. But that was our business course for artists class. So I painted, but I got a regular full-time job to support my husband going through school. And I did that for the years that we couldn't have kids. And then like Alan and Alexis, I had 5 kids really fast. And during that time, I almost completely stopped creating. One of the first things to go when I get pregnant is my appetite. Second thing is my creative drive. Just disappears. So that was a really hard time in that way, because I felt the loss of that, but didn't know everything to attribute it to.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. And you're late, Alexis and Alan. I mean, those newborn years are so brutal. Like being pregnant and then having babies, it's so beautiful, but it's also really, really draining and really demanding. And when you do it all within the span of just a few years over and over and over again, you kind of just, at least for me, I felt like I was just kind of a shell of a normal human. And I was just this robot mom, just keeping everyone alive. And that took me through lots of years of trying to figure out how I could bring that creativity back in a realistic way with how many children I had and how young they were and how demanding my life was. And really where I am now is the result of years of trying to figure that out and searching and figuring out what balance should look like for a mom, one that has the luxury and opportunity to be a full-time mom, trying to figure out the best way for that to look for me while still feeling like I'm a person.
Yeah.
Outside of that, who has passions and drives and dreams and other things that make them up.
Yeah. I totally agree. And we both did it so fast that it being having kids, where you really do feel like you never really catch your breath. Cause just before your kid gets any more independent, you're pregnant and having kids again. So we've had the debate like a lot. like Alexis, I think similar to you, like has this drive and this interest in doing things in addition to motherhood. But I've maybe not been as supportive as I should have been, but often have said like, we didn't sign up for the do something else path. Like we had kids too fast to do something else. So
we picked a parenting only package.
Right. At least for a time, right? Like, I think on the flip side, all of our kids are going to graduate through those next steps of getting into school and then moving out actually very quickly as well. But do you think looking back on those years, I know we're going to get into where you've gotten recently, but looking back on those years,
What's your mindset? Like, do you think it's like a times and seasons thing, or do you think you would have done something different during those years to try and fulfill that other part of yourself?
I think it's a combination. I've thought about it a lot because, first of all, I think we all naturally kind of what if, you know, what if I had known or felt or figured out what I do now, what would it have looked like then? And for me, my conclusion is I wish I would have had a better combination of both. I think there are seasons that as parents, they just innately are more demanding and they're really high need and high demand and intensity. And you can't take that away. You can't make that go away. But I think there are things that you can do even in those times to facilitate feeling more balanced and more renewed from whatever it is that you do that makes you feel that way. I'm not at all trying to suggest that everyone needs to be a painter. Of course not. But I do feel like we all have our things that make us feel more alive, that make us curious, that make us excited. For me, at least, it feels counterintuitive to expect those to all be within one role and one position and kind of suggest that we're really not multifaceted people anymore once we become a parent. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So for me, I wish for my younger mom self that I would have allowed myself more time to have just simple little bits of time to be more than that. Just give myself space. And I think for me, at least, part of the reason why that didn't happen is because it was really hard for me to ask for other people to fill in for what I was doing. Mm-hmm. Because someone has to do it if I'm not doing it. And so for me, I was really bad at self-care. And we'll probably get into that as well, because I think we're going to talk a little bit about mental health. But that was part of my issue, is that I felt like I signed up for this. Like we talked about, like I signed up for the parenting all the way package. I even went through years of infertility. So I had an added level of self-inflicted importance in that role, if that makes sense. I had waited for years. I finally got to be a parent. And I naively thought that that would mean that I would feel super fulfilled in every way and wouldn't need my own care. Yeah. Obviously, that was me speaking as a non-parent, because as a parent, everyone who has experienced parenthood knows there is probably not a more demanding job emotionally and physically and mentally. And so naturally, we need to care for ourselves to be able to fill that role in the best way possible. But it doesn't feel like that in the moment. At least for me, it didn't. It felt like if I couldn't handle it all by myself without any help, then I was doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Or there, I was lacking in some way.
Yeah. So let's get into it. Like how do you get past that guilt? Because I think a lot of us feel guilt whenever we aren't doing the parenting things, right? Even as a dad, I'm traditionally the breadwinner, and financially I am the breadwinner, but I still feel guilty going to work early and staying late because I feel like I'm not fulfilling that role. So what was that like for you? What things have you learned that have helped you change how you look at that?
That is a great question. I feel like there's so many things that I learned, and I feel like it was learned in little pieces over time. Here a little bit, there a little bit, different circumstances pushed me to different things. But I feel like a lot of it stemmed from me feeling enough mental and emotional lack to seek more understanding and better emotional help. It was enough that I felt like it was really limiting how I felt. Honestly, I would say I probably started in that direction because I thought it was affecting my role as a mom, which was the role that it was easy for me to prioritize and think this deserves the help that it needs.
So what you're saying is what pushed you over the edge and like caused you to look for your solutions was the fact that you felt like it was affecting your parenting, ironically, correct, because it was emphasis on parenting that was maybe causing the problem. But
right. Yeah. I feel like I reached an all-time low is the wrong word, because a lot of what I deal with is anxiety, and it doesn't necessarily feel low like depressive states do. I don't know if you guys can relate to this, but I definitely have times when I'm reacting to a situation in such a way that I know that the situation does not warrant, but I feel like I can't control my exaggerated reaction. I was pregnant with our fifth, and my oldest was 5 and I felt like I was having those situations countless times a day.
Yeah.
Where my reaction felt so exaggerated, but my emotions, that's just where they were. And at that point, I had learned that all of my struggles were, maybe everyone can relate to this, but everything hard in my personality was amplified by pregnancy and there's hormone and that experience of being pregnant. So I knew when I found out I was pregnant with our 5th that that would likely be the case. And I was legitimately nervous about it. And then it was just as bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, I was that it, meaning me, the way I was handling life was bad. And that wasn't when I first started working on mental health, but that was when I think started taking it the most seriously. At that time, I went to my doctor and asked for anxiety medicine and just explained how I was feeling and that I didn't want to. And I could tell that it was, you know, not warranted or unnatural and I wanted some help. And that was actually, even as a mental health enthusiast, there is a lot of stigma around that. And it was really hard for me to do that. And I had some fears about the side effects and what might happen, but it really transformed my pregnancy experience and also my postpartum experience. So I am so grateful for that I just took that step. And I acknowledge that not everyone needs to do that and that it may not be permanent for everyone. And that was the only time I haven't been on medication since then, but I know a lot of people that do so much better with it. And I have been in therapy since then. My hope is that everyone gives themselves space to use whatever care they need to prioritize their emotional health, just like they would their physical health. Because for me, it has affected my relationships in my life so extensively that I just can't really imagine anything else. But that, again, so that is kind of what led me back to your question. How did I get on this path? It was really seeing how much I was struggling in my parenting that led me to that. And that process of therapy, and I was reading all of these books about cognition and understanding like what I should expect for my kids based on their brain development. And I just kind of started this journey of understanding what made my brain work better so that I could feel more empowered by that understanding. And that is kind of what led me to recognizing that we have two things really. One is that one of the best things that you can do as a parent for your children is to take care of yourself. Because you have so much more to give when you feel full and fulfilled and happy. And I'm not saying that you all of a sudden don't have stress or anything, but it's incredible for me, the change I felt in my parenting moments, my ability to feel happy and joy in those moments is hugely expanded because I've shifted and challenged my beliefs that I had subconsciously that, you know, you time is always the last priority. Whatever it is that it's just for you, it can only happen after everything for everyone else is done. And as a parent of probably even one or two children, that's you're probably never going to get to yourself on that list if that's how you prioritize yourself. So you can imagine how often that happened with 5 kids, 6 and under. Never. And I still have to challenge those thoughts because we wire our brains based on what we tell ourselves is true. I'm having all of these experiences when I do challenge that and I do say I deserve this and my family deserves the best version of me, I see the results of making that choice and it's getting easier and easier. So at first it was like every single time I tried to do anything for myself and it was stressful, I took that as an indication like, oh, nope, you were wrong. You're not supposed to do anything for yourself. But I've been able to, with the help of therapy and time, I'm able to challenge those belief biases, as they're called in the in the mental health world, and see the change. But I think the first step is just trying to be more aware of how you feel about things and then pay attention to how you talk to yourself and how you value yourself. And then I feel like the first step is curiosity, like keep yourself in a non-judgmental, curious zone. And it's so much easier to kind of figure out what might be good and what might not be.
Yeah. So it strikes me that like not all self-care is created equal. And what I mean by that, and this is...
Yeah, elaborate on that.
So this is always how these go. It becomes self-balance problems. I think I feel similarly where I feel like I'm too stressed. I need an outlet. I need to recharge. To me, I'm not an Alexis or Michelle where I just feel driven. I'm not serious, as you described it earlier. Like what I think I like to do is nothing. I feel like I need nothing times. But what I found is like nothing time isn't very satisfying. And the end of nothing time is devastating, right? Because it's like back to the real world. And so I find it actually like puts me on edge sometimes to do nothing, because then the kids come in and I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to go back to all this again. So it strikes me that what you and Alexis like to do, which is to create, to whether it's business stuff, and Alexis always wants to be creating these businesses and creating benefit for the world, and you love your art and creating, it just strikes me that as you're looking, you have to look for something that actually fills you, not just an escape. It's not just stopping doing the hard stuff or the parenting stuff, if you will. Those things feel the same sometimes, but but it's like finding something that actually has like positive benefit, which is harder for somebody like me because I don't feel like I have things like that. But that's interesting. So tell us about what you're doing now and how has your journey kind of led to this and your current project you're working on?
So like I said, I kind of started taking baby steps to giving myself the freedom to explore what had previously made me want to get up in the morning, you know, the things that made me curious about the world, that made me excited and passionate, the things that get you on your phone looking for a new podcast to listen to or a new course to sign up for, or just anything that makes you excited. I would go back to curious. I feel like that's a really good indication that it's something that could be really beneficial or meaningful. Hmm. And I just kind of started doing that. And really, it led me back to art slowly because, well, I think there's some technicality that was involved in that. But really, my first love in art is painting with oil. And oil is not super flexible time-wise. Like once you mix the oil, there's a ticking time bomb until it dries. And it's a lot bigger process to actually mix the oil paints. And so, but that was what I had really focused on in my undergraduate. And since then, anytime I pulled out the paint, that was usually what I did. And I pursued all these other avenues, like looking for family-friendly, time-friendly ways to still be creative. And I found a lot that I enjoy. I really love home decor and designing and decorating houses. And I dabbled in baking and found a lot of great outlet. So I think, again, I think if something makes you curious, you don't have to be married to it forever. You don't have to have the same commitment to it that you would to a spouse that you actually committed to. It's just a pursuit. And I think that openness and that curiosity allows you to pursue things without feeling all this pressure to make it something more. And I think that allowed me to kind of get back into seeing the world in creative ways and pursuing creative things, because that really is what makes my brain kind of light up. So I pursued some of those other things that were better with the time frame, and my kids have grown up a little bit. Just as a caveat, my kids are Alan and Alexis's kids' ages. So it's not like they're old yet, but they're older than all toddlers. And so I have a lot more freedom than I used to. But it was really the pandemic that brought them all home. And all of a sudden I was teaching them all and trying to handle all the toddlers that were in school, and my husband was home working. And that really is what drove me back to needing to create in the more traditional ways that I had in the past. I started sketching, and then I kind of reintroduced myself to watercolor, which is something I was definitely trained in college, but didn't pursue a ton in college. But I found out that watercolor, I could sit down and immediately start painting, and I could walk away and then start right up again. Watercolor dries and you just add water. So it's really perfect in that way. But that was all coming simultaneously with me doing all of this work to understand and rewire my brain to recognize that I, as a person outside of a mom, was still valuable. I thought I was just prioritizing, but when it came down to it, I truly didn't feel like I deserved that time. Whatever that looked like, whatever it was that I wanted to pursue, if it wasn't directly related to being a mom or serving others in my family, then it felt wrong. And so it was definitely a combination of feeling a need to create and also rewiring my brain and challenging a lot of false belief biases. And that is a process that takes time. but I was slowly learning or relearning, you know, Michelle all by herself is valuable. And if she loves to create, then you should create and you should make time for it. I also realized about myself that because I didn't feel like I deserved those things, I wasn't speaking up for them either. And so even though Kevin had so many times said, what do you want to do? You need free time. What do you want to do? And I got to a point where I would just say, I don't know. I don't even know what I would do if I had free time. Mm-hmm. Like I just couldn't even pick something. And then with that progress in challenging those belief biases, I started saying, well, can you watch the kids so I can do this painting? Or, and I know this is something we talked about a little bit, but that is part of how I've made it work is learning and reteaching myself, hey, it's okay to ask for other people to step up for you. But you need to be willing to ask, because I had set all of these habits in motion where I just never did. And so in spite of my husband's insistence of me figuring out things I could do for myself, I just didn't. So yeah, that really, it was during the pandemic that I don't know exactly what it was. It kind of tipped me over the edge and I needed more creative time than I ever had before. And that's when I kind of redeveloped my love for painting specifically. And the interesting thing is this, you know, I'm doing all of this work and I go to therapy. I've had the same therapist for years and I am so grateful for her. She's been so instrumental in my life. And I've done all of this work to change and grow and heal. And I tried to do it all within this, again, in the self-prescribed box of you have to do this all and heal in all of this as just a mom. And once I opened it up to creating, I was reminded how much creating enhances all of my other efforts in life, if that makes sense. So if you picture it, you know how you can do a photo edit and you can like saturate it. Mm-hmm. That is what creating does for me in the way I'm processing everything, whether it's spiritual questions or physical issues or just anything I'm wondering about or thinking about or concerned about. Creating for me, and again, I don't think that this is the way that everyone finds that, but I do think that, you know, finding those things that really make you tick can do that for anyone, but it enhanced all of those other things. So all of these years of therapy and working on my mental wellness, that creating, I feel like just really bumped it up in an exponential way from where it had been before. I started this journal keeping. And I just, every day I would sit down at the end of the day, because that's the time that worked well for me. No kids around, hopefully. And I just started writing anything. And at first it felt a little bit clumsy and awkward. And the whole point was I'd write the date. I'd say I found light in, and then just write anything, large or small, like seemingly unimportant or important, and just anything that affected me positively, I would start writing it down. And I feel like I was, again, I wasn't thinking like, oh, I'm training my mind to see the good or seek light or, but that's naturally what happened. And it affected my sleep. It affected my days, because then all of a sudden it wasn't just when I was sitting down to journal that I was seeing those things. I was seeing it throughout the day. I'm sure part of that is because I knew, like, oh, I'm going to be writing about this day. And that practice, I think, in being able to see the good, choosing to seek it and find it, is also, I mean, it's what led me to consider creating again, because I saw the good that it was doing for me. And then kind of in the circle of life, the creating enhanced my light seeking, because all of a sudden I was seeing light in ways that I only do when I'm thinking creatively. And suddenly really small moments were bringing me that light that I had been seeking for all those years. And I haven't like fixed everything and figured everything out, but it definitely has changed my life a lot.
Yeah. So you've created a journal now that people, right? This Seek Light, Share Light that you've called it, which I love. So tell us about the journal and what you hope that people will use it for.
Okay. Yeah. So like I said, seeking light is what led me to create. My feeling of the importance of sharing light is what led me to start sharing my art again, because I separated myself from social media a few years ago completely, and I really didn't miss it. There were enough negative things, I'm sure, partially because of my anxiety, that it was really easy for me after that first week or so to just not have it be a part of my life. And then in this process of seeking light and sharing light, I was writing some dreams and hopes for 2021. And one of them was based on how passionate I felt about art and what I wanted to do with that dream of creating art again. And another one was a hope and dream of feeling closer to God. And I just felt like I should be sharing the light that I found in my creative process. For me, Seek Light, Share Light was always in the background of my mind because it is the catchphrase that I've used for so long for myself, or the mantra, or whatever you want to call it. But I didn't really initially intend to share my specific journal practice, but I wanted to share the concept. But being a newbie back on social media and feeling super vulnerable, I kept trying to make it like a back burner, not very overt thing. I would reference Seeking Light, but I wasn't really overtly sharing about it. And then really it was a conversation with a friend. I had already decided to make journals with images from my art on them. And it was really a conversation with a friend who is a really incredible business owner. And she was asking me to tell her my story, and I was telling her, and she just asked me, "Michelle, why aren't you sharing this? Like, this is the heart of what you're doing. Share this, tell people about this journaling practice that you do." I guess I just didn't trust my business instinct enough to feel safe enough to do that. And so I'm really grateful for friends in my life that can help lend that inspiration. But yes, the Seek Light, Share Light journaling is something that I've done for years. And it was really in talking to her and then to some other people about the effects of it that I realized, you know, maybe this isn't an isolated experience and other people could use this practice to help them train their minds to see the light. I feel like in almost every conversation I have, I find other people who have been struggling for the last year or two, different reasons, different things. But I feel like the pandemic and its effects and kind of the world at large right now has just been heavy in general. And a lot of people are struggling, and life is real and hard, and not always hard, but hard things happen. I just keep hearing common themes of people wanting to find more peace. And obviously that resonates with me because I have felt the same thing. And so the purpose and the hope for this Seek Light, Share Light journal is that it's a really straightforward, simple practice. It's manageable. You can write as little or as much as you want. In my experience, it's a really great starting point, and it affords people the room to have it show them light in their way. You know, it's not like trying to force everyone to be a painter or an artist. Instead, people will be able to see where the light is in their life. And hopefully that will lead them, like it has me, to pursue those things that bring that light. And the other part of it that I'm really excited about is that part of it is seeking light, but the other part is sharing light, because I really do feel like we gain so much more by not just finding light in our lives, but sharing what we find and then hearing from other people, because I think there's so much to learn from each other and to gain from someone else's light seeking.
I love it.
So where can people find your journal and you if they want to reach out to you or just even follow you on social media, whatnot?
So my social media and my website are the same. It's Michelle McGuire Studio, at Michelle McGuire Studio for social media, and michellemcguirestudio.com for the journal. I feel like there's so much light in the world. And if your personality is anything like mine, it's easy to slip into feeling like that's maybe not true and to get overwhelmed with the bad, because there is a lot of really hard and crazy things happening. And that's the other thing I love about this practice. It's not meant to be a tool to stuff or shun hard things or hard feelings. You're never meant to pretend that they aren't happening. For me, what's so empowering is recognizing that the light can exist at the same time, and that you can teach your body to hold both rather than just the negative.
Yeah, I think it's so good. It's awesome what you're doing, Michelle. And Sally, and say these journals have custom Michelle art on them. They're beautiful.
It's true.
So a good place to leave it on your nightstand. So we will put links in our show notes to all those things, because typing's for losers. So
Yes. And you can also start sharing along with hashtags Seek Light, Share Light.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, nice. The journal purchase also gets you access to the private community group. But Seek Light, Share Light will hopefully be another place that you can find light and uplifting situations happening for people.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. I love that.
Cool. And you can follow tags on Instagram.
Yeah. Yes, you can.
So do it. Awesome. Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Alexis, thanks for your great research and your amazing editing.
And Alan, thanks for showing up.
Happy to help. You can follow us on Instagram at Alexis Tanner Lane or find us on our website at alexistannerlane.com.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you're hearing, make sure to tell a friend. That's the best way for people to find out about our podcast. And if you haven't already, give us a rating.
And as always, a special thanks to our five kids for being kids.